And so it is now time for us to welcome our speaker, Dr. Lois Van Toll, and there will be time for questions afterwards.
Thank you, Emily. So I'm here to talk about a rapid response team that six of us raised in some of these big cities where we knew that Winona has a fair number of immigrants, either documented or undocumented, and we wanted to make sure that they would not be arrested without some kind of due process, and we didn't want them just arrested and taken away and no one would know. So we wanted to do something now rather than waiting until ICE was actually here and detaining people. So there were six people who we got together to do this and who have been part of this group. So Dwayne asked me to talk to you, and at first I protested because I said, wow, but there's three members of the team, like are, you know, right here. And he explained patiently that that actually it's better to have an outside expert. So I usually attend the Quaker meeting upstairs, and so I am an outside expert. And besides, I'm wearing a badge, and so, you know, that makes me an expert. So first of all, what is a rapid response team? Because I know maybe you're familiar with other rapid response teams like in hospitals or the military, but for us, this was a group of people who attend a training session and agree to be on a contact list to get a text if ICE is in Winona and doing something, arresting people, detaining people, harassing people, that a text would go out to a group. Whoever's available would come to that site. And we needed a way to communicate. And so we talked to other groups, and we decided to use the Signal app, which is something you download on your phone. It's just a messaging platform. And yes, it's the same one that Pete Hegseth used to transmit sensitive military information to his brother, his wife, his personal lawyer, and also a reporter at The Atlantic, which is how we all heard about it. So we set up training sessions and then have people download the app, and then we connect them to the app and that we are watching them. So when people receive a text on, to say that there's a possible ICE sighting, they go to the site if they're available. There's no obligation to do this. If you're at work or you're sick or, you know, many reasons why people might not be able to go, but it's if you are these. So we had cards printed, and I have one of those cards here. We have two cards. One is just the red, maybe you're familiar with this one. It's a Know Your Rights card that tells people what their rights are regardless of their immigration status. These are rights that you have because you are here in the United States. Then our other card, which we had printed in both English and Spanish, tells people that they can call this phone number if they are concerned about either ICE's detaining them or a friend or a family member. They can call this phone number. And this would connect them with a man called David Perdomo. He works at the Communities Organizing Latina Power and Action, or the COPAL office in Rochester. So David then alerts our group, and then a group text is sent to everyone in the group. We then go to the site. We wear these badges to identify ourselves as constitutional observers. Once there, we take photographs, we would video, record license plate numbers, ask ICE agents to remove their masks, get their names and badge numbers, if they have badge numbers, if they have badges at all. We take notes, record their actions and their speech, ask them if they have a warrant that's signed by a judge. We don't interfere with the action. Our intention is not to be arrested, although it's unlikely that we would be arrested, although we can't absolutely guarantee that no one would be arrested, but we think it's unlikely. We try to stay at least 8 feet away from ICE agents, and we are persistent. So have there been ICE agents in Winona? We've had several reports, but no actual arrests that we know of. And Dwayne communicated with the city and county police, and they said that they were not aware of ICE being in Winona, but also added that they would probably not be aware that if ICE was in Winona, because ICE is not required to communicate with local law enforcement. We do know that about a week and a half ago, there was a definite sighting at the Quick Trip across from Fleet Farm. There were two ICE agents. They had their ICE-marked hats. They were in unmarked vans with government-issued plates. So we got a text. Two of our members went, but by the time they got there, the agents were gone. One of our members did talk to the employees at the Quick Trip, and they said that they did not see anything. They weren't aware that ICE had been there. We know that there have been arrests in Rochester, and we feel like it's just a matter of time before it happens in Winona, so we want to be prepared for this. We've had one false alarm, which turned out to be a good practice run. We had a report that ICE was doing what was called Freaky Friday, which was arresting kids as they left school. So we first heard that they were targeting 14 and older, then we heard 10 and older. So we sent a text, and eight of us were able to respond to the text. And we went to both the middle school and the high school, and we alerted people at Cotter as well. And we did not see any ICE agents, and in the end, this turned out to probably just be a hoax. But it was actually good practice, and we were glad to see that our system worked, and we felt a lot more prepared after we did that. We felt like we could actually do this. So I first heard of rapid response teams when I was living in Rochester, New York. And I joined a team there. And then, so I knew about the concept. So about 6 months ago, I was at a meeting of concerned citizens. And people started saying, we should do something to help immigrants. And so I thought about, oh yeah, there was the rapid response team. So I contacted an old friend back in Rochester, Paul Miner. And he told me that he was having some health problems, but he had been very instrumental in helping to get that group set up in New York. But he said he was having health problems, he referred me to someone else, so I talked with that person, and very sadly, immigrants. We started meeting every 2 weeks at Blooming Grounds Coffee, and we finally reached a point where we felt like, okay, we're never going to get this completely right. Like, we don't really know how this is going to work, and besides, everything keeps changing. So we just need to go ahead and just do it and work out the details. But we did get it started. And so we set up training sessions for people. I know some of you have taken those training sessions. It's just an hour, maybe 2 hours at the most, a training session to learn how to be a constitutional observer and be part of the rapid response team. Once you've taken the training, you can then sign up on the Signal group, and then you'll get a text anytime we are concerned that there's an ICE action. So why do stuff like this anyway? I can only answer for myself. For myself, I grew up in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was one of seven kids. My dad immigrated from the Netherlands, and my mother's parents also immigrated from the Netherlands. They were members of a very strict Dutch Christian Reformed church. Everybody I knew growing up was Dutch and belonged to the Christian Reformed church. We went to church twice on Sunday. We went to catechism. We went to Sunday school, prayer meetings, young people's group. And I attended the Christian school that was associated with the church. But so much of what I learned growing up didn't really make sense, and especially the part about everybody who didn't believe like we did was going to hell. And there was something about that. For one thing, our neighbor was Catholic and was really good, so something didn't quite fit. But I was kind of stuck in that church until I got my driver's license. So I was 16, and a friend and I started going into downtown Grand Rapids, and we started going to a Youth for Christ coffee house. And we met the most amazing people. They were not like us at all. They were mostly not white, they were not Dutch and Reformed, and yet they were wonderful people. And some of them went to church, some of them did not, some of them were very religious. And one of the people that I met was a guy named Hervey Morris. So Hervey was my age. So Hervey was an only child. He was raised by a single mom. He had no idea who his dad was. His mom was not religious at all, but she sent him to Catholic school because she'd heard that Catholics take care of their own, And as a single mother, she wanted to make sure her son was somehow taken care of. So Hervey and I talked a lot about religion. And obviously we had grown up in very different traditions, but we decided that we needed to find the one true religion. And we went on a mission to find the one true religion. So we decided that victim was Sister Judith Burns at the Catholic Church. She was wonderful. I really, really liked Sister Judith Burns. Our next group was the Jehovah's Witnesses. So we called up one of the Kingdom Halls, asked to speak to somebody, and we ended up meeting this whole family of Jehovah's Witnesses. They were also really wonderful people. Then we met with some Baptists, we met Presbyterians, we met one Hindu, and they were all pretty wonderful people, and we liked what they were saying. And so over time, we came to the realization that we were working from a faulty premise. There was no one true religion. So once we realized that, so what was there? And Hervey and I decided that while there were many ways to be religious or spiritual, that what was important was that people had, so we didn't care what people's beliefs were. We cared about, are these the things that, how they live their lives? And my dad, because my dad was an immigrant, and because I had so many refugee patients in my former practice back in New York, I realized that these were vulnerable people. That, you know, my dad's family had a much easier time of it, but I looked at the things that my Somali patients had to go through, my migrant farm worker patients had to go through, and it was tough. They had very tough lives. So I wanted to do something, and as you know from, I mean, all of you here in this room do wonderful things in the community, I know that. And so we all do these things for multiple reasons. So for me, it was because being part of this rapid response team, number one, it's a good feeling to know that you're trying to do something to help make the world a better place. And the Lord knows we need a lot of improvement right now.
Lois will be around coffee time for more questions and answers. It's now time for us to...